We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report for December 17, 2009. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, USDA says it has joined 17 other nations in an effort to increase world food supply while cutting greenhouse gas emissions. We'll have this and other stories this half hour, and we'll have the first of a series of occasional interviews looking at twin row planting. That and the latest agricultural weather. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Thursday afternoon, futures settled like this. In Kansas City, March wheat 515 down 15 and a half. May 527 down 15 and a quarter. July 538 and three quarters down 16. March wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade settled at 521 down 16 and a quarter. May 533 and a half down 17 and a quarter. July 543 down 18 and a half. March corn settled at 397 down 13 and a quarter. May 407 and three quarters down 13 and a quarter. July 416 and three quarters down 12 and three quarters. September 422 and three quarters down 12 and three quarters. December 429 and three quarters down 12 and one half. January beans settled at 1022 down 37 and a half. March 1030 down 37. May 1036 and a half down 36 and a half. July 1041 and three quarters down 35 and a quarter. August 1037 and a quarter down 34 and a quarter. January soybean meal settled at 307.40 down 950. March 302.80 down 1030. January soybean oil settled at 38.64 down 169. March 39.05 down 170. December live cattle settled at 81.42 and a half. Down 70. January feeders 93.97 and a half, up 112 and a half. February lean hog 65.55, down 127 and one half on the day. And those are today's settlements in Kansas City and Chicago.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Taking a look at AM 580 Chief Meteorologist Ed Keezer's extended two-state highlights, he says light snow will likely work into northern Illinois late tonight and continue tomorrow. Light snow will arrive in northern Indiana tomorrow, and some showers of rain and snow will break out in west central and southwestern Illinois tomorrow. Two weather systems will bring some snow to Illinois and Indiana over the weekend. The first system may bring 2 to 3 inches to some areas west of the Illinois River Friday night into Saturday, with amounts elsewhere mostly an inch or less. The second system will move northwest to southeast, with light snow Sunday afternoon into Sunday evening. And snow may fall in the Ohio Valley around Wednesday and Thursday of next week.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report and on the web at WILLAG.org. That's WILLAG.org. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon, Dan.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Double-digit losses. The dollar's screaming higher today. The grain's wilting under that pressure. But I wonder, and I want to start with corn, and I want to start with the March, and I wonder really how much technical damage was done, because last week we were talking about corn being essentially in a range between 370 and 423, and where we finished today is about midway in that range.
And I think that'll be the thing to kind of watch over the next week or two, basically, in light holiday trade. I think if you count out the days, we got, about 6-7 days left of full trading and a couple half days. So I think that'll be what we'll want to watch. If you look at the individual March corn contract, if you kind of draw a trend line off of your September low points, it kind of comes into play somewhere here around this 385 level or thereabouts. And we'll have to kind of see whether or not that kind of holds or if we slip on down to the 375. So there is reason to think that, you know, we may want to kind of stay in that range that I mentioned here a week ago or so. You definitely have to pay attention to what is happening over on the dollar front. That's clearly telling us that a major low is in place, and the long-term trend shift to higher is underway. Now, there's probably going to be a lot of noise in that, but a lot of this strength that we experienced this fall was no doubt due to, a pipeline, an empty pipeline, and harvest delays. But the dollar was at the forefront of a lot of that strength as people sold the dollar and bought commodities. And you can kind of see, you know, here a week or two ago when the dollar took a big jump, gold had like a $50 loss. Today here we're seeing a $31 loss in gold. So we are seeing unwinding of that, short dollar, long commodity spread.
Looking at the U.S. dollar index monthly chart, if you do some Fibonacci numbers off of the March high to the lows that we made last month, We've already taken out about the 23.6% point, and I guess you would say that 38.2 is right in sight.
Yeah, I think, and like I said, I'm when you look at the bigger picture and you try to be objective about it, the dollar has penetrated both the November high and October high, and for those of us that look at major macro charts, we look at quarterly charts, you're going to see that the dollar is in excellent position here to close out the fourth quarter with a hook reversal to the upside after a long decline pretty much all year long from the March highs. The other thing is it did hold above that trend line that we've talked about here for the last two or three weeks, right above this 74 area. So when I look at the monthly chart, it looks to me like there's a head and shoulders bottom forming on the dollar chart, and we've got a long ways to go up to the upside. And probably the key factor here will be that the economy will have some inflationary pressures in it, and the Federal Reserve Board will have to start raising interest rates, and that will generate interest in owning the dollar as to collect those higher interest rates.
All right,
over
then.
Time.
Yeah, let's turn our attention then to the beans January charts. Today we declined with the double digit losses down to that support level in the 10.21 to 10.19 area. Managed to kind of just hold there at the end of the day. But I would guess that we're at a point where you wouldn't want to see any more losses if you're a bull.
If you're a bull, you kind of want to see this bean market kind of catch in here. The 50-day moving average on the March futures is sitting down here around 10:15. We close at 10:30. If you draw a trend line off of the October low and the early November low, we did close below it, but we'll have to see whether or not it maintains a consecutive close underneath that, or if it turns around and bounces back tomorrow and closes above it. But yes, if you're if you want to be a bean bull, the market kind of needs to hold right in here. This March futures in this 10:30 area, and continue to march sideways, or otherwise you're vulnerable to some pretty steep declines in here, I think.
Now, how much credence, Dan, do I give all of this price action in December on these charts going forward into January?
Well, you don't want to ignore it, but December is a month that's noted for issuing a lot of mixed signals. And this could be part of that. And I think the fact that we're in a noisy environment to start with is probably more aggravating. But I think, and I've mentioned it before, generally speaking, when I look at the longer-term cyclical influences, I'm a little concerned as we move into 2010 that overall commodities could be more in a negative defensive mode. I think the dollar is going to be more on the offensive and rising, and a rising dollar is basically deflationary type price action. So I guess I'm, the dollar's telling me that maybe we are in for some defensive price action as we go into 2010.
Thank you, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, he is in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, the U.S. Agriculture Department says that it has joined 18 other countries in a global alliance focused on curbing greenhouse gas emissions while increasing world access to food. The USDA will increase its spending on agricultural climate change mitigation research by $90 million to more than $130 million during the next 4 years. USDA will contribute its findings to the Global Research Alliance. The group, which also includes Australia, Canada, France, Germany, India, and Britain, will focus on finding ways to grow more food without increasing greenhouse gas emissions. Agriculture produces 14% of global greenhouse gases. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton today proposed that major economies, including the U.S., come up with $100 billion a year over the next decade for developing nations to fight climate change. Clinton said the plan, which is dependent on reaching a strong accord by the end of this week's summit, would entail public and private money, but declined to specify precisely how it would be divided or what would be the U.S. share. House Minority Leader John Boehner and several of his colleagues are calling on President Barack Obama to get three stalled free trade agreements back on track by mentioning them prominently in his 2010 State of the Union address and pledging to support them. The three FTAs with Colombia, Panama, and South Korea were negotiated during the Bush administration. In a letter to President Obama, the GOP House members said they were encouraged that during a recent meeting, the president expressed a positive outlook on moving the three FTAs forward. China next week will request the establishment of a World Trade Organization dispute settlement panel to rule on whether U.S. safeguard duties on imports of Chinese tires violate global trade rules. The action is the latest manifestation of growing trade tensions between Beijing and Washington. Senate Finance Committee Chairman Max Baucus says he will try early next year to pass legislation ensuring no lapse in the estate tax after Republicans blocked another effort to extend the tax for a three-month period. Democrats had sought to extend the tax at its current 2009 levels, but it now appears likely the tax will be repealed as scheduled on January 1st. OPEC says world oil demand will rise more than expected in 2010 as economic recovery gathers pace, but a huge volume of excess supply will weigh on the market until the second half of the year. The last monthly report from the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries before it meets to set policy next week also pointed to a future rise in production from its members in defiance of agreed output limits. Analysts say the report underscores the expectation that OPEC is unlikely to alter its production targets when it meets in Angola on December 22nd. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. At least two major implement dealers are selling twin-row planters this winter, and seed companies are in the process of releasing plot results of twin-row planting this past growing season. Over the winter, we'll be looking at this issue with a number of agricultural companies. Today, we take up the issue with Steve Paskowitz, Senior Research Scientist of Pioneer Hybrid International in Johnston, Iowa. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon to you.
Understand that you've actually been looking at the twin row issue for a couple of growing seasons now?
That is correct. And we have been looking at this in our replicated research trials, comparing different planting configurations. And when I refer to planting configuration, I mean single row 20s, single row 30s, and also twin row 30s as well. And we've had those planting configurations in replicated trials over several years here at Pioneer.
And also those replications both in irrigated and non-irrigated land.
That is correct. We've had locations across Iowa, Nebraska, and in the central Corn Belt looking and trying to understand how these different planting configurations impact grain yield and also if there's differences with regards to hybrid performance and what is the optimum plant population as we look at these different planting configurations.
And so you did some tests in 2005.
That is correct, both 2005 and 2006, looking at a number of different hybrids and looking at plant population levels. We actually had five different plant population levels going from 24,000 plants per acre up to 48,000 plants per acre, and these were final stands.
And so as you do some analysis of those tests, what things are you noticing?
What we have found with regards to the results, and this is looking specifically at grain yield, we have seen that the single row 30-inch out-yield the single row 20-inch or the twin row 30s across those plant populations, again, going from 24 up to 48,000. And as you indicated, we're looking at these results from dry land locations and also irrigated locations as well.
And the last test was in 2006, so I guess I need to ask, because the technology advances on seeds is fast and furious. Do you think that if you did the test in 2009 with the latest hybrids from your company that the test results might be a little different?
I don't believe the trends would change. And what we're looking for here is a consistent yield advantage or a consistent yield change as we look at these different planting configurations. As we looked at results from our company provided information and also looking at university data as well, we have not seen a consistent yield advantage going from a single row 30 to a twin row 30-inch planting configuration.
And there was no significant difference between yields in 20-inch single rows and 30-inch twin rows. The case has been made to me when I was out at the Farm Progress Show. The implement dealers were trying to make the case, well, producers put fertilizer and nitrogen and all the things they need to grow corn all across the cornfield, and a lot of it goes to waste between 30-inch rows. And so if there was a way to somehow stagger the plant, that might help the yield because you could increase the population, increase the yield. I suppose the trade-off, though, is that you're also dealing with a thicker canopy, and that has implications too.
That is correct. And as we think about the distribution of nutrients throughout the soil profile, what we'd like to be able to do is have that corn root system explore as much of that rooting profile as they can for both nutrients and water as well. So to have a root system that is actually growing further out and down from that main stem is very, very important. And also as we think about light and competition above within the canopy, I would like to suggest that as we think about equidistant plant spacing versus a single row, the optimum, what we'd like to see is to get more light quality and quantity down to that mid and lower part of the canopy for a longer period of time during the growing season. And a single row planting configuration allows that to happen for a longer period of time during the growing season.
So under what conditions then might a twin row configuration be something that is desirable?
What I think and what we have found or what researchers have found in the South is that when you get under 36 or 38-inch rows, and they plant on beds down there in the South, some of the twin row responses have been positive and have seen a more consistent positive response as well. When you get to those wider row spacings and then incorporate a twin row planting configuration on those wider row spacings.
What do you see on the horizon in terms of research that will need to be done to deal with this issue further?
There's a couple of things, and I think one of the most important approaches that we need to think about as we look at different planting configurations is plant density. And many times we see results coming from sources where they see a significant yield response going to a narrower row or from a twin row system. But what we need to really look at is, were those planted at the same plant population as a single row 30? Many times the results show a yield increase, but they're at a higher density or higher plant population compared to the single row 30. So one thing that is very important and we incorporate into our replicated trials is that we plant every different planting configuration at varying levels of plant population. So we can compare a 30-inch twin to a 30-inch single row at all five of our density levels. So plant population will be very important. Also, as we think about different plant architecture, what we'd like to see is, again, more erect leaf type on that upper part of the canopy, which will allow to get the light down to the mid and lower part of the canopy for a longer period of time during that growing season. And we're looking at hybrids that we may be able to achieve that type of plant architecture.
Anything else before we let you go?
No, I just want, Pioneer's not promoting one planting system configuration over another. We're just trying to understand how our hybrids perform under these different planting configurations, and again, what is the optimum density, so we can provide our growers with the information that they need to maximize their profitability in whatever system they choose.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Steve Paskowitz, Senior Research Scientist of Pioneer Hybrid International in Johnston, Iowa.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. Illinois' unemployment rate dropped ever so slightly in November to 10.9%, but state officials don't see it as a reason to rejoice just yet. They say the slight decrease of 0.1% from October's jobless rate is to be expected in the ups and downs of a national recession. Nationally, the November unemployment rate declined by 0.2% to reach 10%. Illinois' Department of Employment Security says the pace of job loss has slowed.
Job loss in Illinois during the last 3 months has averaged about 6,000 each month compared to an average monthly job loss of 25,000 during the first 8 months of this year. A Northern Illinois lawmaker wants to end the tuition waiver program for children of state university employees. Representative Dave Winter's bill would remove language that allows those children to receive 50% tuition waivers on undergraduate tuition at their parents' institution. Muhammad Republican and fellow House member Chapin Rose says he's concerned about the measure, but says he also thought it was up to each university to offer that benefit. Rose says it would make more sense for the state to eliminate the program that lets General Assembly members offer scholarships to the students of their choice. Governor Pat Quinn says he barred anyone convicted of violent crimes from taking part in an early prison release program. He told reporters today that he gave those specific instructions about the unpublicized program to his corrections department. Quinn has said he knew ahead of time about the plans to begin releasing some prisoners after just a few days behind bars. He halted the practice this week after the Associated Press reported the release of hundreds of inmates, including some convicted of violent crimes. A Champaign County judge has denied a temporary restraining order sought by County Clerk Mark Sheldon over the state's undervote notification law. But Sheldon says his legal efforts to have it declared unconstitutional will continue. Judge Michael Jones says while voters have a fundamental right to a secret ballot, the county doesn't have to use the vote tabulating machines. Sheldon says they're the only ones in the state providing a paper trail for voters. He contends the law violates voter privacy. The machines will beep when a voter fails to select a candidate for an office, requiring them to talk with an election judge. Sheldon says the notification process will offend a lot of voters in the primary, and that will help his case when he returns to court. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report and on the web at willag.org. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Dave.
30 and 60s were out today. What did they tell us?
Well, the 30s and 60s are rather similar. The 30-day, the forecast for the month of January has temperatures pretty much above normal across the northern tier of states, from the Pacific Northwest to Minnesota, and then below normal from Texas eastward along the Gulf Coast and up to North Carolina. And in between, well, they're calling for equal chances, and that puts most of the Midwest, Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana, in the equal chances as far as temperatures and are concerned. As far as precipitation is concerned, a pretty simple forecast, wet along the southern tier from California to Florida, and dry in the Northwest, and actually in the Midwest they have it dry too for the 30 days. The 90-day forecast is just, oh, pretty much the same. It's got it warm, the northern third of the country from the West Coast to the Great Lakes, and below normal temperatures in Texas eastward to Florida and northward to the Carolinas. And once again, the Midwest is in that area of non-committal forecast, the equal chances of warmer, wet or dry. Forecast has been pretty much the same the last several months on the long range. In my view, they've probably overdone the warming a little bit in the north and probably have it about right elsewhere.
Any particular point, place in the Corn Belt we need to keep a particular eye on?
I think it looks very seasonal for this one. I think what we will see this season, what the pattern seems to feature, is occasional outbreaks of pretty cold weather, and then you get a week or week and a half or so of temperatures near or maybe even slightly above normal, a little bit like today. We have temperatures starting to ramble a little bit above normal, and it'll go back to kind of normal weather next week, and episodes of snow, maybe some light snow on a weekly basis, but it doesn't look very stormy that we're looking at right now.
45 seconds on South America. Pretty good conditions down there?
Yeah, finally. You know, where Argentina has been sort of the trouble spot for the last few years, and this year they're finally getting their rain, and that's good. And when you've been in drought and it starts to get wet, you start to produce a little bit more than you normally would following the dry years, because you didn't use up all that fertilizer you put down in the dry years. So I think Argentina's going to come along with a good crop. For Brazil, they've been wet, and anywhere from adequate moisture as they move into the summertime down there to a little excessive, but I think they'll settle for the excessive moisture, because That's the element that is the most unreliable in the summertime.
Thank you, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
Agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt, and that is today's closing market report. Remember, you can listen to all of our agricultural broadcasts on the World Wide Web. Go to WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.